Welcome to Bellwether Friends. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. It's been a long time. We're sorry for our absence.
It's been a long time.
We're sorry for our absence. Our only excuse is we were out being professional librarians, which can only enrich this podcast.
Yes.
We were at the Massachusetts Library Association Conference. We were at Book Expo of America.
I think it's just called Book Expo now. Rebranding.
I know. Hashtag Book Expo 2018. It's a long hashtag.
It was.
So in our next episode, we're going to bring you a book buzz of picks for the forthcoming book season. But today, we're just trying to get our feet back under us. So we're going to follow up on
more TV bracket winners.
Woo! So in episode 81, found out our top five picks for what we could potentially watch next from our TV bracket. The ultimate winner was The Good Place, which we watched and discussed on this very podcast not long ago. And the other winners were Psych, Vera, Black Lightning, and Sports Night. So we were so efficient getting through The Good Place, all two seasons of it, and watching it and discussing it on this here podcast.
Spoiling the heck out of it,
right?
If you haven't watched it.
That I suggested we might just watch Sports Night, as is one of Eileen's dearest witches.
And wishes.
I know you're not mocking my pronunciation.
Of course not. I love Sports Night.
Right, so we went ahead and watched Sports Night.
And we were super efficient with that.
Right, and then we finished Sports Night, so we went ahead and finished watching Black Lightning.
Which, full disclosure, we had already started watching when it was in the bracket.
Right.
We evaluated it per the bracketing brackets, as we would have with anything were we not watching it.
Right.
So it didn't get to the end of the bracket because we were already watching it. But because we were already watching it, it was really easy to just go
keep watching
ahead
it.
And
also,
keep going.
Also, it's only 13 episodes season one. So.
Yes.
So let's talk about Sports Night, because you really wanted me to watch Sports Night.
Let's talk about Sports Night, baby. Let's talk about Sports Night with me.
See, that
is not selling it to you?
I mean, that pretty much is my experience in a nutshell, right there. A lot of words crammed in. What's the plot of Sports Night, you ask?
Sports Night is an Aaron Sorkin-penned, Tommy Shalhoub-directed sitcom that,
with pretensions to drama,
enjoyed two seasons
of
dramedy. A 30-minute television program.
Mm-hmm.
It was on in the late 90s?
98 to 2000, I guess.
Okay, so the 98-99 season and the 99-2000 season. It is set on the set of a sports cable show.
Yeah, like SportsCenter.
Like SportsCenter. It is basically SportsCenter. One of the characters is based on Keith Olbermann, who was on SportsCenter back in the day. It is lifted pretty much from that. Sports Night has a female producer and a female associate producer, and it has two male anchors and a male boss. I don't know what the boss of the show is, but it has this really tight ensemble cast, and it's got these great peripheral characters, and it's set in this like boiler room of the production of this show, which is a daily show that has to have the 30-minute content, and they only spend 15 seconds on anything.
It's a very good workplace show, I would say.
It's a good workplace show, yes. And if you don't know Sports Night, then what I'm saying is not going to convince you of it. And if you do know Sports Night, then you're like, oh my God, I love Sports Night, because it's a thing that if it got you at the right time in your life, maybe, then just like with reading a book, it maybe spoke to you. I did not watch it live on TV when it was on. I watched it immediately after, maybe. I don't know how. I must have gotten it on DVD. I cannot figure out how I would have gotten my hands on it, because I didn't buy TV shows on DVD and I didn't really watch them.
That was a period where, like,
before Netflix.
I acquired X-Files DVDs, but they were ludicrously expensive and Yeah, I'm not sure.
Right.
But so you did. You watched it.
And
so,
I watched I feel like I didn't watch it live, but maybe I did. And I'm just not remembering it properly because this was the late 90s. It was toward the end of my time living in New York, and it was set in New York. And I remember really relating hard to the Felicity Huffman character. And I was library branch manager at the time, and I had this like little set of people that I was trying to get to do the things that we needed to do on a day-to-day basis. And so maybe I was watching it
maybe
live.
You were,
because
if you weren't, you should have been.
Felicity Huffman is the producer, and Peter Krause and Josh Charles are the anchors, Dan and Casey. Felicity Huffman's Dana is the producer, and she is completely neurotic. I just defined neurotic for someone earlier this evening, and she is neurotic, and she is really, really great professionally, and she is a mess in her personal life, and there are a chunk of women of my generation who might identify with that. I think there are younger women who maybe don't have that complete split where
she is super competent.
My work ate all of my competence.
Right.
And there are parts, and so there are parts of my personal life that were not squared away because my work ate my competence. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen to other people. I can only speak to my own experience and relating to this woman in this character in this show. The associate producer is a younger woman. So Dana is in her 30s and Natalie is in her 20s. Natalie's played by Sabrina Lloyd. She's neurotic in a different way, but everyone works really well together. They have this like really, really deep sort of bond that is not, there's an intimacy to it that's not entirely sexual. There's chemistry among the characters. And I've been talking a really long time. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I want you to outline the rest of the characters and then I'm going to tell you my order of liking them.
Oh, awesome.
It's going to illuminate the things I like about the show.
So Dan and Casey, Josh Charles and Peter Krause are the anchors,
co-anchors.
The co-anchors of the show. And one of them is like paid more and he's like a little more important, but they've been partners since they were in college and they've been like doing this sports writing since they were in college together. So they're really tight and there are some tensions between them. Robert Guillaume, one of the greatest actors of our time, is Isaac Jaffe, the producer. He's not like, Dana produces the show, but
she's
Isaac
like
the is the boss of
producer,
the show.
And he's like, anyway.
And, but it doesn't seem like he's the boss of any other show. It seems
no,
like he's just
like
the boss of this show.
Right.
And they are part of a network that is owned by a conglomerate. So they're part of the Continental Sports something, CSC. And I don't know what that stands for. But they're owned by a giant conglomerate that's always trying to get them to get bigger ratings. And so there's always this tension about this. And sometimes they're out at the bar after the show. The show is on from 11 to 11:30 at night. And so they come to work at like noon and they're just wild until the show goes live and then it's over. And then of course they're like really wound up.
There's one more character.
Jeremy, played by Josh Molina, who you may know and love from The West Wing or from Scandal. And this was one of his early, this was his first TV show. He was in a movie before then. But he is this statistical analyst who is just brilliant and also has really not a lot of social skills and can't always read the room. And he does have a relationship with another character and there is that connection in the show.
Yes.
There are good things and bad things about messing around with a coworker, I guess. They're the second tier. And then there are the rest of the people who are working in the booth during the show. There are these two guys whose names I don't know. And there's Kim, who's the awesome woman who we do pay attention to.
Right.
But it's great that there are women involved in the production of this really bro-y show. And there are elements of it where they're not only talking about football champions all the time. They are talking about other sports and they are showing, evincing interest in runners. This guy, the first episode, they're all watching this guy break all kinds of records running, and everybody's, like, really engaged in it. This show makes me cry. I cried multiple times. There were only the two seasons. We watched them really fast, and when we would watch two or three episodes at a time, and I was always crying. I was like,
yeah, you don't usually cry when we watch things. That's my role.
Right. So, I am looking forward to your ranking of the Sports Night characters.
So,
are you counting down from your least favorite to your best favorite?
No, I'll count from the, I'll go from the top. So, okay. The top is Robert Guillaume, obviously.
Robert Guillaume is the best thing about whatever he does.
Right. And I thought it was really moving when they had him, his character have a stroke to reflect the stroke that he actually had on the set of Sports Night. And, you know, it would have been a tragedy for the show had he had to be written out. And I'm glad that they kept him in because, you know, he always said the stuff that I felt like saying when they were going, everyone else is going on and on and on, repeating the same thing back and forth to each other. He was like, do I have to be here?
Also, he was the first Black Phantom on Broadway.
Excellent. Thanks, Robert. Second, I guess, see, this is where it gets harder. I guess Natalie, and then Dana, and then it gets harder. Because
you don't like any of the dudes.
I don't like any of the dudes, but I guess I can't remember who's Dan and who's Casey.
Dan is Josh Charles.
All right. So they're both tied, and then Jeremy's at the bottom.
Interesting.
I know that he's your second favorite, or that you really liked him.
I really liked his character. I didn't want to hang out with him. I didn't want to talk to him. If I'm going to put the characters in order of favorite that way, that would be compromised. I had the hugest crush on Josh Charles from Dead Poets Society onward, and he was the only reason that I tried to watch an episode of The Good Wife.
Right.
I mean, and I didn't watch any more of The Good Wife, and that was my own problem. It wasn't the right time when I tried, because just like reading books at the right time in your life, you have to watch TV shows at the right time in your life. So coming back to Sports Night, how many years later? Almost 20 years later, was really interesting because I am a very different person than I was 20 years ago.
Just like anything, some of it ages poorly and some of it ages well. Like
the hairstyles age poorly.
The fashions.
Yes.
But I mean, like, Jeremy and Natalie are dating and he wants to break up with her and she's like, no, we're not broken up. Like, that attitude and various other attitudes around, like,
consent
and dating, that's different now, or we hope it's different now. The podcast Represent has a thing called pre-woke watching, as something that you watched, and then when you look back at it in your woke state, you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Friends, for example. Right. So, you know, I want to analyze it as a product of 20 years ago, and it has a lot of the, like, if you are a Sorkin fan and you haven't seen Sports Night, then you should watch it. Definitely.
Definitely. If you are a Sorkin fan, absolutely.
I have not, I have watched a little bit of The West Wing. I have watched Molly's Game, obviously. I have not seen The Social Network.
Oh, really?
I have not seen The Newsroom, but based on everything Margaret says about it, I should not watch it.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to watching The West Wing, but the part that I don't like is the dialogue. So
this intrigues me because I would call Gilmore Girls dialogue Sorkin-esque,
yep.
And I can understand the dudeliness versus the lady-centricness.
And that might be it. Splitting point.
That might be it for you.
The roads diverging.
In the wood on a snowy night. I feel like I love the words. I love the jam-packing the words in. I think that the wokeness factor,
right.
I would never call myself woke, but I know that I have learned a lot in my life about the way people are. When I watched it again with you, there were aspects of it that made me cringy, And watching it with you made me cringy because you know how much I love it. And I was like, oh no, I love this so much. And Anna's going to watch it and she's going to be like, why does Aileen like this weird dynamic? But there are things about the chemistry between characters, and there is some romance in it, and there is some...
There is some romance, but that's... I'm not trying to, like, pick on everything, because I did enjoy watching it, and there were episodes that I laughed at and I enjoyed, but they have Casey and Dana...
Yes.
...have, like, a will-they-won't-they thing until the middle of season two, after which it never comes up again. Pretty much. And yes, fine, they have to work with each other, but the way it was left was like sort of amorphous, and you don't see either of them with anyone else. And so, like, there was romance, but instead of a happily ever after, which, you know, romance person wants, there's like absolute cessation of romantic involvement. And then Jeremy and Natalie break up. And are they back together at the end of the show?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Well, and it kind of doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
There's chemistry between more characters than that. I
think the friend chemistry is great. I liked it.
I think it's brilliant in the Natalie and Dana chemistry is really good because they call each other on their nonsense. And they talk over each other. When they're talking with each other about things that are not work-related, they are very much very professional when they are, like, working and when they're outside of work. I mean, I guess they go to the bar a few times. But when they are talking in the hallway about one of the dudes or something, they are very girlfriendy.
Right. I mean, I guess.
Yes.
What do you mean, girlfriend? So if you go, as is my favorite thing to do, if you go on Archive of Our Own and you check out what the ships are for this show, almost all of the fic is about Dan and Casey.
And they have a very strong good chemistry.
Bromance vibe going on, and you could totally see that happening.
And they have a couple of little tiffs
that
are very, totally very, like... tiffy.
Realistic.
They're very tiffy. There's a realism to it that's also, like, you only get that kind of mad at someone that you are more invested in than a coworker.
Right.
And they're, like I said, they're friends. They've been working together in journalism since college and so on. But that's a thing for them.
Like, when you work with someone... or a group of people, and you just spend all of your time with them, and then after work is over, you go out with them. So you just, like, you have a certain in-the-trenches mentality, and you're like, I know everything about you.
Yeah. I've worked in small libraries where we had a relatively small staff, and we got, like, really, 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 really tight. And then I've worked in larger libraries, but then I was working alongside someone. My friend Rick, to this day, we talk about... the time that we spent 2 years on the desk together, 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, where we were working in a library where the desk schedule wasn't really observed, and we would get to work in the morning and we would go out on the desk and we would just chit chat the whole day, and nobody would give us any breaks, and nobody would give us a lunch break, and we would just be sitting out there. And, you know, it only took 3 or 4 months of this working together. We also started work the same day.
Oh, nice.
In that location. Nice. And so he knew the organization a little better than I did because he had been working there a while. But we essentially started the first day in this department together. And after about 3 months, we started repeating our stories to each other.
But we did it
for like 2 years. It was just that. And then we continued to work together another 6 years. So we've kind of got that sort of like war veteran bond.
Yeah.
I can text him in the middle of the night and he'll answer me, even now.
And
it's like 18 years later.
So, definitely, if you were looking for a workplace comedy with serious elements. So, another thing that it does well is, like, bring in a serious issue, like The West Wing does. Like, suddenly we're talking about black kids getting arrested for smoking marijuana. Or suddenly, you know, something more serious is coming up and they're treating it with the liberal lens. Seriousness that
steroids in sports,
right?
That comes up, like, yeah.
And it's not all necessarily like directly sports related. There is Dan's, you know, history with his brother's death and like
and his father and his mental
going
health.
To therapy and like, you know, it would have been interesting to see where if they went anywhere with that.
There's a sexual harassment incident.
Well, so. Where it comes, I think relationships between men and women is where, like romantic relationships is where the show breaks down for me. For example, when Dan was really interested in the woman who worked on a different floor, and he kept asking her again and again and again and again, like, they didn't show us all the times that he asked her out, but it was reportedly, like, 20 or 40 or 50 times. And, like, you know, that's just uncomfortable.
Yes.
It's just uncomfortable. And I don't, I mean, maybe we should watch The West Wing so I can see the difference, the sameness. We were reading a EW article on, this is an oral history, but not a really long one, so you don't have to invest that much in it, which we will link in the show notes. But they were talking about how the second and final season of Sports Night overlapped with the first season of The West Wing, and that Aaron Sorkin was writing every episode for each show at the same time. And it seems like you can kind of tell, like, his energy was moving toward The West Wing and away from Sports Night.
Maybe he forgot that Casey and Dana What's were involved. Maybe that's why it just disappeared in the middle of the season.
Things happen sometimes.
I can't keep up.
So I am glad that we watched it. And I recognize that some of my nitpicks are like something, you know, some of those things are things that every show in 1998 would probably have done without anyone being batting an eye. But in our current place, we can do better.
Definitely the persistent pursuit of the Terry Polo character by Josh Charles was really squicky as we watched it. It just kept going on and going on. And I wanted to go back to something that you said. You said that you, like, you didn't hate it. You liked it okay. I'm sorry, I'm mischaracterizing it. But I wanted to say that I would not have been able to keep watching it with you if it was bugging you.
I
checked with you on it because of the time frame of it. I wouldn't have been able to, like, keep watching it with you because I like it so much.
Yeah, I don't want to attack
you were
something that
hating
you
it. Right. And it's totally fine for you not to like it, and it's 20 years old and you didn't see it when it was
right
better in context. We have a cat wrestling with a catnip toy off camera, so that's what the thumping is.
And jingling. So I think it's good to, like, critically engage with, and I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's probably going to be my favorite Aaron Sorkin property.
I would say that it is the Aaron Sorkin property that I would choose for you out of them, and I have seen more than you have.
I saw
The Social Network more than once. You love sports. I don't remember how many seasons of The West Wing there are. I think there are 8, and I think I've watched 6 of them, and I watched them all over the course of about 3 months because I was in a mental place where I was watching, I could watch 6 episodes a night.
I really do love the theme song of The West Wing.
Yes, the theme song is great. I like that everyone's wearing suits all the time because they are.
I like CJ Craig.
Oh my goodness, I love CJ.
But there are
so
a lot of
much.
Dudes on The West Wing.
Tons and tons of dudes, but there is
so
a similar
dudes. I mean, I like
workplace boiler
also,
room
yeah.
sort of connectivity
yes,
among
yes.
them, and I loved Bradley Whitford at the time. I don't know.
We need to.
So maybe we'll give it a try.
Trophy Wife. We need to watch Trophy Wife.
Oh, okay. So maybe we need to watch Trophy Wife. So thank you very much for watching it with me. I feel like I maybe don't have to go back to it. Who were we going to loan it to? Someone. Was it Molly? I need to go put it by the door and take it to Molly, because if we loan it to her, I won't try to watch it again.
We have too many other things to watch.
We really do.
Some of them newer.
Yes, we don't have to dig deep to 20 years ago to watch things, but we can dig deep to 20 years ago if we wanted to start West Wing.
We could.
But we also have Law and Order from 1990.
Right.
If we want to go 30 years ago.
We can put it on the bracket.
Ka-chung.
Next time.
Oh, maybe we'll do that.
So the other show that made it to the top five was that we watched. There were five. Was Black Lightning, which is a superhero show on the CW, which already has many a superhero show.
So many superhero shows. This one doesn't have any crossovers yet.
Oh, sorry. Arrow and The Flash and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow. And anyway, I would rather watch Black Lightning than all of those other ones.
Props to the CW for the superhero shows.
Yep. I like most of the ones I've just mentioned, especially Supergirl.
Why do you want to watch Black Lightning instead of all the others? And why are you glad there are no crossovers? Tell me more about this.
Because the others are so crossovery and so, I mean, they're beyond their first season, so they're so, like, weird stuff is happening with the timeline. We're having musical episodes, and we're crossing over, and we're doing this, and we're doing that, and it's kind of silly. I read a headline about Black Lightning that said that it was a show that gives the superhero television, it brings it up to the current moment and gives it, like, real issues through a superhero lens. Stuff that's problematic today is being handled.
Okay, so yes. And
they have cool powers.
They have cool powers.
And they're a family.
What I like about Black Lightning is that they're operating from within. On Arrow, there is the neighborhood that is being blown up by the billionaires, which is where the very specific drug is being infiltrated, and the billionaires own the club that is in the neighborhood, and they're going to eradicate this neighborhood. The bad guys are going to eradicate this neighborhood. And in Black Lightning, all of the action is happening in this area.
Right, in the town.
It's not the same town. I'm not saying that.
You have failed the city. So, we should say right now, we will probably spoil the first season of Black Lightning, which has been over since, like, April or something. So, you know, it's out on DVD soon. You can put a hold on it at your local library.
You might be able to watch it on demand. I think it's probably
streaming on demand. So, it's set in a primarily black
Freeland
community named Freeland. Black Lightning is the secret identity of the principal of the high school.
Jefferson Pierce.
Jefferson Pierce, played by Cress Williams.
Who we love. He was on Heart of Dixie.
Yep. And he is divorced from his wife, who is a doctor.
Lynn.
And they split up because she, like, couldn't handle his superhero life beating him up all the time, because while he has lightning powers, that does not make him invulnerable to punishment. And somehow he said he wouldn't use his powers anymore, and they got a divorce. And
right.
Then he didn't use his powers anymore until, of course, the first episode or first two episodes of this series. So he has two daughters. They're both under 20. One of them's in high school, and one of them's in college. The older one has dated at least one, possibly two women.
Yeah, at the beginning, she is dating a woman.
Yep. And then she breaks up with her.
And then she breaks up with her, and then she's dating another woman.
Or she's interested in another woman, at the very least. Anyway.
And then that disappears. Right, so maybe Aaron Sorkin was writing it.
Oh, Aaron, get your hands off of my show.
Or try to at least carry on with some relationships.
Right. So you have this whole family dynamic thing, and then the one white guy character who is... Oh, there are a couple of white guy characters, but this is the only one we're supposed to like.
James Remar.
Is his...
He's Peter definitely a hey, it's that guy.
Yeah. He is a tailor slash spy slash he creates all the suits.
It's totally like Kingsman
suits, yeah.
Because he's got a tailor like shop. Kingsman. Every time he shows up, he's got like the tape measure around his neck. It's yeah, very Kingsman.
So that's one of the things I didn't really like about Black Lightning is that like there are very few white people around.
Very few white people around.
And most of them are bad guys, such as Logan's dad.
Yes, Logan's dad is a bad guy. He's a bad guy in everything. We meant to look up if he's ever not played a bad guy and neglected to do so prior to recording, but maybe I'll put that in the show notes.
So, in the arc of the first season, Black Lightning takes up his mantle again because there's, like, crime running rampant in the streets of Freeland, and even the good work he's doing at the high school with the kids cannot combat what's going on in the streets, which are, like, controlled by gangs, and there are various mob bosses, and so he decides he's got to step in.
Everything is really personal for him because he's been the principal of the high school for a while, and he's really deeply engaged with the community and with the kids, and this is a public high school where they wear uniforms because of reasons, and he has personally had a hand in getting kids through high school. He, like, brings them along and helps them out and makes things happen for them, and then some of the gang leadership are his former proteges.
Yeah.
And so it's really personal, and he's like deeply troubled by it. And he thinks that they've been forced into it rather than joining up of their own volition. He's got this sort of like, you know, we can get you out of this. And they're sort of like, I like this life where I've got the money and the green light, which is the jingle jangle of Freeland,
right.
Is green light, the drug. What is it on Arrow? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
I love, love, love all of these shows have this single insidious controlled substance that ruins everything in their society. My favorite thing about them.
I like...
Oh, wait. And Anissa's hair, but we're going to talk more about that.
Oh, yeah. So I like Black Lightning's relationship with his friend who is on the police force and who has to be like, well, Black Lightning is a vigilante and needs to be stopped. But
Henderson!
Henderson. I'm going to take information from him to try and stop actual crimes because... that's my job.
Henderson is the poor man's John Legend. If you have been, like, browsing through pictures or seen things.
Yeah,
if you, like, get to know TV shows from Tumblr, like Anna does sometimes, the guy who's the poor man's John Legend is Henderson the cop.
So if you like superhero shows, or if you just like a family show with people that happen to have superpowers, I think Black Lightning would be a good choice for you. You might be thinking, I have too many superhero shows, but it's okay to drop some of the Netflix Marvel ones.
Well, and what I'm thinking, so I've watched a bunch of Arrow and Supergirl, and I have not watched much of The Flash, but I really like the crossovers, and I am really here for the ludicrous melodrama of it. This is stuff that appeals to my opera-loving soul. When everything is, like, super over the top and the stakes are really super high and the costuming and the makeup are just impeccable throughout and completely unrealistic. And I'm here for it. And I really love that there is Black Lightning there on TV with not a lot of white faces on it for a variety of reasons. And I'm glad we've been watching it, and I think we'll continue to watch it when it comes back in the fall and hope that it keeps going. And if it crosses over with Supergirl, then we'll see what happens.
That's fine.
But it does. But it's not in that world.
It seems like it's in a different place.
Yeah, in Supergirl and The Flash and Arrow have each other's locations as part of their universe, and Black Lightning doesn't. So that's maybe going to be protecting us from that. Can we talk about Anissa's hair now?
Please do.
So one of the best things about Anissa's hair, about the show, is Anissa's hair. Anissa is the older college-age daughter who has some lady-appreciating tendencies in early episodes, which of course disposes us very positively toward her. And throughout the show, from scene to scene, she has hairstyle changes that are seriously hours-long hairstyles that will change. And it's not just her changing clothes, but she, like, comes home from work with her hair styled one way, and then she puts on her sweatpants, and she's got a seriously six-hour hairstyle change between the changing into her sweatpants. And I love it. I mean, all of the characters are extraordinarily handsome. Aesthetically pleasing, yes. And their beauty is enhanced by the hair and makeup and lighting of the show. And I love it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, look at her hair. Like every single scene. We watched a bunch of it over the last week or so because we were planning to talk about it on this episode. And I spent so much time going, look, another hairstyle the whole time. And it's just beautiful. She's got braids in her, she is Thunder. When she discovers her powers and she gets a suit, she is Thunder to go along with Black Lightning. I cannot wait to see the suit for the younger daughter, spoiler, and the
who is listed as just Lightning on something I saw.
Just Lightning on some, yeah. But she is not Lightning. She is like,
who knows? She's got flames.
Got flames, but she is a generator,
right?
Like Black Lightning channels electricity. He takes electricity from the environment and channels it, and Thunder takes like ambient energy where she like takes an inhale, which is very obvious. If you're doing something wrong and you hear somebody go, then you need to duck because that's what she does when she's about to thunder you. But I can't wait to see what Jennifer's suit looks like and what her hair looks like. Her hair has been like flat ironed blowout throughout most of it. She has not
just like the vice principal
been on board with the hair thing. Whereas,
but what about Anissa, Khalil? Has the hair for both of them.
Right. Oh, Khalil. Oh God, it's just so. Sometimes it's like wild curls, and sometimes it's like sleek ponytail.
The blouses that go along are often remarkable in themselves.
Yes, remarkable. It is a feast for your costuming and hair needs, whether you are a superhero show watcher or not.
Yeah. So we have wholeheartedly recommend Black Lightning. And I'm not sure if we'll attack any episodes of Vera or Psych, the remaining two winners of our bracket challenge. Stay tuned.
We'll see what happens this summer. We have a little bit of time off at some point. I wanted to say, I mentioned Black Lightning to a superhero loving friend who was like, I'm not really that into it. And I did not pursue the conversation with him. I wasn't spoiling for a fight. I'm always spoiling for a fight. We were talking about something else and I had just like dropped in the Black Lightning reference. I am curious to know, dear listeners, if you have superhero TV show issues with Black Lightning that are relevant. I don't know if I would just be like, well, if you don't like Black Lightning, that's fine. You don't have to like Black Lightning. I'm sure that I miss some kind of point of superhero show rules or something, but I really don't care. I just like the melodrama and the color and the beauty, and I'm here for it.
Okay. Do you have any obsessions?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Anna. I scroll through Instagram far longer than I ought to any given day, and as you have noticed for yourself, Instagram ads are weirdly relevant. Like, Facebook is always telling me how to get pregnant or something.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, Facebook ads are not relevant to my experience, but Instagram ads routinely show me things that I must buy or do.
Yeah.
And I saw an ad for a game. Those of you who have tried out games that we have been obsessed with in the past might enjoy this. This one is called Trigon, Trigon. It's free in the App Store. I don't know if there is an Android version of it. I have not investigated, but I'll link it in the show notes. It is not Tetris-y, but it's kind of Tetris-y. You are placing some little triangle pieces in a hexagonal shape on the screen. And so it's like puzzle pieces that you are positioning, where the puzzle pieces are made up of triangles and they fit into the hexagon with varying levels
maybe
of success.
We'll put a video in the show notes or something.
Yeah, I feel certain that the website for the game will have a video of the positioning of the little pieces. It is one of those just sort of little therapeutic moving things around. Anna does really well with complicated quest games, and I want a game that I'm going to play for a few minutes and then I'm going to lose it and it's going to be over and I can put it down, which is really what I like.
This is good for you.
It's good for me. I saw it on Instagram and I was like, oh, that looks good. And you said, download it. And I was like,
fine.
Okay, if you insist. Do you have an obsession, Anna?
I have one joint obsession.
We have a joint obsession?
Yes. It's okay. A movie. It's called Ocean's 8.
Oh my god. I think I might have been saving it for the...
Don't save it.
I might have been saving it for the Book Bez episode. I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
Ocean's 8, Ocean's 8, Ocean's 8. If you haven't seen Ocean's 8, you need to go see Ocean's 8. If you... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was really fun.
With lots and lots of ladies. Dudes were... not minimal important in this
flash framed.
Yeah. It was good. I mean, James Corden was a brilliant insurance investigator.
Sure, sure.
He was
but
very
he was
funny.
Only there for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. It was great. And Richard Armitage was
a lot of chemistry between Sandra Bullock and Kate Blanchett, that's for sure.
Yes.
There's already fic up on Archive.org.
There is, and I will be linking to at least two articles that I read about it that acknowledge that this is a gloriously lady-centric movie where we can believe in our hearts that everyone in it is queer and it is not stated, clearly.
Right, right.
And that's a disappointment.
It is a disappointment.
And
there's
we loved
so many
every
opportunities.
We loved
Must
the movie.
Make a new one.
We loved the movie.
And we did.
We
like
loved
it.
The movie. And we wanted them to be gay for real and not just gay in our hearts.
Right? We did. So that's the only...
I need to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Up front. But everyone is beautiful and talented and hilarious, and it's...
It was fun.
Again, with costuming and makeup and
right.
hair.
Right.
Oh, amazing.
Kate Blanchett's
Mick
See,
Jagger
I started,
suits.
I started wearing my black leather bracelet again.
She's wearing her black leather wrist
to
strap.
And
Sandra Bullock's extensions.
Oh, well.
I want beachy waves. I'm going to start, like, putting product in your hair.
Oh, you want me to have beachy waves?
Well, you already have the long hair. I can't grow my hair out, so I just might put some product in your hair and try to, like, live vicariously. No, his hair won't do it. Yours will.
Okay. If I just braid my hair and then leave it for a few days when it's wet, it'll be beachy waved.
No.
Okay.
It doesn't work that way.
So my personal obsession is a book called The Kiss Quotient by Helen Wong, which just came out on Tuesday, I think last week or this week. And it's about a woman...
Last week, because yesterday was Tuesday.
Right. I have no idea what day it is. It's about a woman who's on the spectrum, and her mother has been giving her, like, I want grandchildren static. And so she decides, since she has trouble having a relationship with a man, and she's decided to hire an escort, a male escort, to, like, teach her how to have sex and how to have a relationship so that when she finds someone that she wants to be with, she'll, like, know how to do it. But, of course, she falls in love with the escort, and he falls in love with her. And it's really cute. He has, like, his own issues, which is why he's escorting. Basically, his mom is sick, and his dad is a rascal. No, I wouldn't say that. He is a despicable person. Anyway, he thinks he's just like his dad, and so he has that, like, I don't think I'm good enough for her, so I'm gonna leave, that kind of stuff.
Ugh.
But it's a little refreshing to have him be the escort, to have him be like, well, I'm not good enough. And of course, one of the main characters being autistic is something that almost never happens. It's certainly not in romances.
Right.
And I listened to a podcast with the author, the Wicked Wildflowers Club, where she talked about, in the process of writing this book, how she got a diagnosis and how much of herself she ended up putting into it. And so I recommend it to everyone who likes romance.
We'll link that podcast in the show notes. And I was on the sidelines while Anna was reading this. She sometimes reads me bits of her book and sometimes just sets her book down and tells me what's going on in it. And this was one that I will be reading shortly. And
you can also listen to it. It's on Hoopla.
Yes, it's on Hoopla, which is exciting and wonderful.
Yep. And so our musical obsession is also joint this week, I believe.
It is.
I'm one of those where we're surprised it's not on the playlist already.
Right.
But it is This Is Me from the Greatest Showman soundtrack. Not the Kesha version, the Keala Settle version. And this was reinforced today when we were at the all-school grade school concert and the fourth graders sang This Is Me, and I cried like Aline cries at sports night. And so, yeah, I'm putting it on the list. I will accept no demurrals.
Yeah, it's a good anthem-y, self-lovey song for you if you have not heard it yet. It is definitely in the vein of a lot of my own musical obsessions of the past. I was compiling a Spotify playlist of all of my musical obsessions, but I was using the musical obsessions to remind myself of things that I was liking, and I have all of these songs that I, like, Get Back Up Again from Trolls, and, like, the one from Zootopia,
yep,
and Let It Go. I have all of these sort of, like, I'm a strong girl kind of songs that I like, and This Is Me is right there with those.
Yeah. So, it's on the list now. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Bellwether Friends, BellwetherFrnds. If you want, you can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at SurlySpice, SurlySpice. Our In and Out music was provided by the lovely Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HimissJulie.
Bye.
Bye-bye.